Modern-day Scandinavia holds a certain allure. The social ideals, the exquisite taste in decor, the mastery of its crime thrillers, and a jazz and pop music scene that's famous worldwide. But what about music from a little further back? In 1694, Johan Helmich Roman was born in one of the most powerful of European empires, Sweden. But powers were shifting. As the absolute monarchy of the 17th century gave way to the Age of Liberty and the Enlightenment, Roman was set on a path that led him to become known as the father of Swedish music. Flautist Lisa Besnosiuk with the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment, conducted by Anthony Halsted, in the first movement of that flute concerto in G major by Johan Helmich Roman. The thing with Roman is that although you might not have heard of him, he left an incredible musical footprint, and I don't doubt for a moment that you will have heard of the many musicians he encountered during his travels across Europe. In today's programme, I'm going to look at Roman's life and career, and we'll hear some of his many pieces, as well as some of his more famous contemporaries. When he was 17, Roman was given a job as violinist at the Swedish Royal Hofkapellet, where he also played his second instrument, the oboe. His desk partner was none other than Johann Sebastian Bach's much-loved and talented older brother, Johann Jakob. This is the brother whom Bach lived with after they were orphaned, and the one who is said to have inspired this heart-aching capriccio on the departure of a beloved brother when he left for Sweden in 1704.
Thank you.
Gustav Leinhardt with young Sebastian Bach's Capriccio for the departure of his beloved brother Jakob when he left home for a job in the Swedish military band in 1704. It was there, in Stockholm, that Jakob Bach would have met the young Roman. German and French influences were strong at the Swedish court, so no doubt Jakob taught Roman a great deal. Truth be told, despite being considered its musical father, Roman wasn't actually Swedish by birth. His Finnish father and German mother ensured him the best education in Stockholm, and a precocious Roman had, age 7, performed difficult passages from diverse compositions with much skill at the royal court. But Roman had greater ambition and itchy feet. With permission from the king, Charles XII, and finances finally secured, he left for London in 1716. It seems he quickly secured work at the home of Italian opera in London, the King's Theatre. And he impressed the English court with his violin and oboe skills, so much so that in 1717, when the theatre temporarily closed, he joined the court of the Duke of Newcastle as a gentleman. He moved in circles with the likes of Geminiani and Bononcini, Italian composers who were both resident in England at that time. But Roman's schooling was perfected and his top musical connections secured thanks to basso continuo lessons with Maestro Handel, complemented by instruction in composition from Dr. Pepusch. Crispian Steele Perkins with the Harmonious Society of Tickle Fiddle Gentlemen in the minuet from Pepusch's Concerto Grosso a 6 in D major. 27th of April 1720. The newly reopened King's Theatre bristled with anticipation. King George I and the Prince of Wales had taken their seats. Handel took to the harpsichord, and waiting in the wings were some of the foremost singers from across the continent. Johann Helmich Roman could be seen amongst the second violins in what was now one of the foremost opera orchestras in the world. Handel lifted his arm to begin the first of many successful performances of his first opera for the Royal Academy, Radamisto. Thank you. Nicholas McGuigan and the Freiburg Baroque Orchestra in the overture to Handel's opera Radamisto, the first performance of which took place in London in 1720 and included the subject of today's programme, Johann Helmich Roman in the second violins. Meanwhile, back in war-torn Sweden, there was a distinct air of Scandi Noir. In November 1718, King Charles XII was fatally shot whilst inspecting trenches. The details are a bit murky. Enemy fire at best, murder at worst. Throw in the dubious dreams of his surgeon, given as evidence in court, and multiple exhumations in the 19th and 20th centuries, and the story of his demise is still not straight. His sister Ulrika Eleonora was elected queen, but abdicated in favour of her husband, who was eventually crowned Frederick I. This royal pair loved music and wanted Roman back to sort out the mess that was music at the royal court, and particularly the lack of operas and concerts in Stockholm. Funnily enough, Roman, who had matured into a seriously accomplished modern musician, wasn't so keen to leave the vivacious musical scene in London. But he dutifully returned in 1721 as deputy master of the Royal Chapel and was so successful in raising the musical profile of the capital in the ensuing 6 years that he was awarded the top gig as chief master of the Swedish Royal Orchestra. Palace Savaria performing Roman's 1725 secular birthday cantata for King Frederick I, a fine Italian comedy for two soloists, soprano Svezia and bass Federico. Queen Ulrica Eleonora was treated to similar cantatas, but in 1727, Roman celebrated her birthday by dedicating to her his only collection of published works, 12 flute sonatas. Despite writing cantatas and sonatas, concertos, symphonies and festive orchestral suites, psalms, motets and a mass, these were the only works printed during his lifetime. As a flautist in 18th century Stockholm, I'd have been a frequenter of the spice dealers. Bizarrely, they were the ones who sold flutes and sheet music, and I'd be in for a treat with Roman's prize collection of flute sonatas. They're emotionally very complex. Roman spurned the strict counterpoint observed by some of his contemporaries, writing music from the heart rather than the head. But it's clever stuff, full of twists, turns and unpredictability. I hate to say that in this way Roman seems to have been the bad boy of the Baroque, but in his only published collection, he steps aside from his Handelian habits and doesn't hesitate to break more than a few rules. It's a breath of fresh air. The Largo from Roman's Sonata No. 7 in G major, performed by Dan Lorin and Ensemble Paradiso. It's the first of three slow movements in a row, music designed to break your heart whilst it agonises over whether or not to be a saraband. It's probably true to say that Roman's compositional approach began favouring the mixed style of North Germany, but developed into a full-blooded Italian manner, including the Neapolitan style of crazy that challenged the ideals and symmetry of the age. Telemann praised the sonatas for their lively and very charming composition, but they go much deeper than that. The bold harmonies, dramatic dissonances, and exotic cluster chords you hear harpsichordist Anna Paradiso realising on this recording are the result of her research into Roman's copy of Francesco Gasparini's treatise on continuo playing, which he had translated into Swedish.
Thank you.
Grasso Continuo treatises weren't the only thing Roman was translating. In 1731, he cemented his place in Sweden's musical history by pioneering the nation's first public concerts. Modelled on the Paris Concert Spirituel, Roman presented sacred works on stage, and of course Handel featured heavily on his programmes. But in tailoring the music specifically to his audience, he insisted that the works by Handel that he'd first heard in London, like the Chandos anthems, were sung in Swedish. Winning hearts and minds, Roman's own compositions continued apace. You'll hear that Handel's influence remains strong in his Golovenmusiken, rich, festive instrumental music commissioned by the Russian ambassador in Stockholm, Count Nikolai Golovin, for the feasts that celebrated St. Petersburg's coronation of Tsar Peter II. You're listening to The Early Music Show on BBC Radio 3 with me, Hannah French, and today I'm exploring the life and travels of Johann Helmich Roman. We don't know much of Roman's private life. He married in 1730, but tragically his wife died just 4 years later. Perhaps this explains the return of his itchy feet. In 1735, he set out to explore the musical life of Europe. Not only London this time, but an itinerary that took him first through Rome, Venice, Padua, Florence and Bologna, before going on to Vienna and finally Munich, Augsburg, Dresden and Berlin. In these cities, at musical crossroads, he encountered firsthand the debates over which was superior, the French or the Italian styles. He experienced the latest experiments in the Gallant style, and he brought back musical souvenirs that epitomised the ideals of the age. A fascinating collection of his own works from this time are his Assaggi a Violino Solo. Assaggio translates as an attempt or trial, but these are in fact extraordinary 3- or 4-movement sonata-esque solo violin works. Although it's unlikely he knew of Bach's sonatas and partitas, he most probably heard Geminiani's Opus 1 solo violin sonatas when he was living in London. Let's hear violinist Jaap Schroeder in the first movement from Roman's Assaggio in A major. On his return, Roman remarried, and coincidentally, his next major work was for a marriage ceremony. The groom, Adolf Frederick, Crown Prince of Sweden. The bride, Louisa Ulrika of Prussia. The wedding, well, the first bit had taken place in Berlin, without said groom. The bride's younger brother, August Wilhelm, had very decently been his stand-in at the ceremony. In fact, the first meeting of the prince and princess was to take place a couple of weeks later, on the 17th of August, 1744. To the west of Stockholm, flag-bedecked yachts and naval ships lined the narrow strait that led to the lavishly prepared palace of Drottningholm, and the prince sailed out to meet the princess. Luckily, they reportedly hit it off, and she disembarked to the pomp of cannon salutes, trumpets and drums. Roman provided the soundtrack, his Drottningholm's Musiken suite. Amid the traditional festivities of banqueting and revelling, a solemn ceremony took place to confirm the marriage. Imagine the scene. Dignitaries, ambassadors, courtiers and families of the royal couple take their seats in the Hall of State, the opulent room in which they're presented with what can only be described as the ultimate wedding gift, the Palace of Drottningholm itself. It's furnished with a dais covered with rich Turkish tapestries and crowned by a canopy of silver cloth trimmed with a long golden fringe. Roman turns to his assembled musicians as the prince and princess enter.
Thank you.
Romans Drottningholms Musiken, performed here by the Helsingborg Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Andrew Manzi. It's a sparkling collection of 25 instrumental pieces, which, like the 45 movements of the Golovin music we heard earlier, was intended to be an inventory of works suitable for varied use throughout the event. Roman, the well-travelled, cosmopolitan composer, incorporates elements of the Galant style into the clear melodies and rhythmic driving bass lines. The final hymn of the suite, on the occasion of this royal wedding, was accompanied by blasts from the ship's cannon fire. Musically accomplished Adolf Frederick and Luisa Ulrika brought new musicians and ideas to the Swedish court. And as composer of the moment, you would think that Roman would have been at the centre of it all. But that wasn't to be. He directed both the funeral music of Frederick I and the coronation of the royal couple. But somewhat surprisingly, we now find him out of town on the estate of his father-in-law. An extraordinary fact about the Drottningholms Musiken is that Roman wrote such jubilant, carefree music to celebrate marriage just weeks after his second wife had died. Responsible for 5 young children, and with failing health and increasing deafness, he began to withdraw from court. His final choral work was his Swedish Mass, a Missa Brevis, more at home in the concert hall than the liturgy. Anne-Sophie von Otter in Romans O Herre Gud Gott's Lamm, with unmistakable resonances of Handel's He Shall Feed His Flock. Roman was a disciple of Handel to the end. Not just away from court, but in the wilderness was how Roman described his final years. An increasing recluse, he returned to the books on music theory by his old composition teacher Pepusch and the comfort of compiling a psalter of his own settings. Roman died of cancer on the 20th of November, 1758. His last will and testament is evidence of a thoroughly modern family man. In it he wrote, "Since my children are all equally dear to me, so shall that which I leave behind be divided equally between them, so that the sisters shall receive the same portion as their brothers." A fitting father of Swedish music, I say.